The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on America's Web Radio are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to America's Web Radio. It's time now for the Doctor's Lounge Show with Dr. Scott Barber.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Doctor's Lounge. I'm Dr. Scott Barber. And you're listening to me on America's Web Radio for the last time. Our producer, David Moxley, unfortunately passed away last month, and I'd just like to take a moment to thank him for all the work that he did to develop and support America's Web Radio and the podcasters and the radio hosts that he had on the show. He was always a very generous person to me, very nice man. And I'm very sorry for his loss. As a result, America's Web Radio is going to be closed down, but the Doctor's Lounge is going to continue, and we are going to be posting updates on the Docs for Patient Care website. That's docsforpatientcare.com. You can go to the website or look us up anywhere on Docs for Patient Care. Additionally, America's Web Radio is going to try to keep up the previous shows so that you can access them, and they will also be providing information about how we plan to proceed with the Doctor's Lounge podcast. We think there is a lot of good information delivered here, and we'd really like to keep educating our audience and providing this service. I'm very proud of the fact that as we look back on the things going on in the world over the past few years, that we were among the first people to tell you the truth about COVID. And honestly, I learned so much about healthcare, about the world we live in from that experience. And I hope the rest of you have learned it as well. And I'm going to have kind of a deep show today, one that's kind of a 30,000 foot view of saving healthcare. Saving healthcare is really important. The doctor-patient relationship is a very sacred relationship, and it's been all but eliminated with the increasing takeover and penetration of government control in our healthcare system. And it's not just healthcare. The more government takes control of everything, whether it be education or anything else, it destroys it. And the reason is because power corrupts. And absolute power corrupts absolutely. And one of the beautiful things about the United States of America is it was predicated on the idea of individual rights and that the individual has value, every individual, and that the people are sovereign and that the government answers to the people and not the other way around. The concept that our rights come from God, they're not bestowed to us by any government or any group of people, is so important. And that's been eroded away. And all of the things that have been happening in healthcare with insurance companies and big business like pharmaceutical companies and device manufacturing companies gaining control of the levers of government, the institutions that control our healthcare, and rather than allowing doctors to serve our patients, we are serving our masters, and I'm going to be reviewing a lot of that and hopefully opening the eyes to a lot of people so that we can take the steps that are necessary to restore a patient-centered healthcare system. And I'm just going to say it right now. The very first thing that you need to do, or we may never have the opportunity to restore a patient-centered healthcare system, is you need to get out and vote. And you need to get out and vote for Donald Trump and J.D. Vance, because the Democrats, Kamala Harris, they want more expansion of government. They want a one-size-fits-all, top-down, government-controlled healthcare system, something we know that doesn't work. And I'm going to review that as well. It's a complete canard for anybody to suggest that the government taking over healthcare is going to provide healthcare to all. That is not what happens in practice. In reality, once government takes over healthcare, they waste money, they steal money, and they deny care. And that's a fact. That's not my opinion anymore. That's a fact. Now, on October 11th, 1798, John Adams wrote the Massachusetts militia that because we have no government armed with power capable of contending with human passions unbridled by morality and religion, avarice, ambition, revenge, or gallantry would break the strongest cords of our Constitution as a whale goes through a net. Our Constitution was wholly made only for a moral and religious people, and it is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. A moral and religious people. That's what John Adams said on October the 11th, 1798. On the last day of the Constitutional Convention in 1787, Benjamin Franklin was asked by Elizabeth Willing Powell. She said to him, "Well, doctor, what have we got, a republic or a monarchy?" And Franklin replied, "A republic, if you can keep it." Well, here we sit on the precipice, I believe, of possibly losing this republic. And as a byproduct, we'll also lose the ability to control our health care. And so it is just so important that everybody get out and vote. Now, when I'm kind of reflecting on my life, I'm getting to be older now. I'm almost 60 years old, and I started to reflect on my life a little bit. I have a good friend from high school. He sent me a picture of another one of my friends. The two of them were having lunch somewhere in Hawaii where I grew up, and they sent me a picture, and they still look pretty great. They don't look very much different, but they're definitely older. And I can remember it was 5 minutes ago, or at least it seemed like that, that the three of us were talking about what our hopes and dreams were for our lives. We, I wanted to be a professional soccer player. That didn't work out. I became a doctor. We've all had kids. Our kids are growing up. My two friends' kids, they're already out of the house. Mine are getting close. And so a lot's gone on. My good buddy just ended up with the prettiest girl in school, which is funny. And I'm just thinking to myself, all of this transpired in a couple of minutes. And it got me to thinking, how did we get here? What does it mean to have patient-centered healthcare? And where does all this come from? Well, I want to start off by saying I recently completed a book that was written by an author named Vishal Mangalwadi. Vishal Mangalwadi. It's an excellent book. The title of the book is called The Book That Made Your World, How the Bible Created the Soul of Western Civilization. And I got to tell you, it was an incredibly powerful book. And it opened my eyes to a lot of things that I know to be true. When I was trying to get into med school, there was a book out there called The House of God, and it was written by a medical student. And he was talking about basically how doctors in many ways are just observers to what happens, and that a lot of healthcare is in God's hands. And that, you know, in many ways, the healthcare community is moving paper clips around on a desk. And the point being, not having much influence on that, that in the end, it's all in God's hands. And when I think about this world that's increasingly being contaminated by propaganda, and I don't even know that it's increasingly being contaminated by propaganda. What's happening in our world today has always been happening. And I think what's different is our realization about what was going on. When I was young, I remember thinking about the Holocaust and thinking about slavery and thinking about the Spanish Inquisition and the Salem witch trials and thinking to myself, I'm so glad that we've evolved beyond that, that human beings don't have this sort of darkness and evil in their hearts. And what I've learned as I've grown older, that there is nothing different today about the human condition than back then. We are just as broken. We are just as fallen. We are just as sinful as we have always been. And because of that, it makes me realize it's even more important that we do not cede power to any group of tyrants that have control over our lives. The idea that the individual has value, that every individual has significance in the eyes of God, is basically the entire basis of Western civilization. And that's the point that Vishal Mangawandi makes in his book, The Book That Made Your World. Now, he articulately makes the case that really everything amazing comes from the Bible. He talks about how art emanated from the monks, the Christian monks, and not monks of other religions. And understand that the author was raised Hindu. I believe Hindu. He was not raised Christian. He came to Christianity later. And these are observations of somebody that was not raised in the Western culture. But he was able to understand that in India, in his hometown, he talked about the fact that there was no individual rights. There were no property rights, that essentially it was run by gangs, and that if people had any wealth, that they were at risk, and that a lot of times the police were paid off by the criminals. And it was a very difficult situation. There's a chapter in the book where he talks about a young girl that was in a village, and she was basically starving to death. And he and his wife pointed out to the family, what's going on? You know, your daughter's starving to death. You need to take her to the hospital. And they basically didn't want to do it. And they were just observing this girl getting sicker and sicker and smaller and smaller. And they basically confronted the father of the daughter, and they said, you have to take her to the hospital. And he kept making excuses. Well, I can't go to the hospital. I have to work the fields. And they said, well, we'll work the fields for you while you go to the hospital. And then they were saying, well, we can't afford going to the hospital. And he said, we'll pay to go to the hospital. Anyway, they get the girl to the hospital. They eventually nourish her. They nurse her back to health. And when she came back out of the hospital, she went and she stayed with the author, Vishal. And she flourished. She did well. And over time, the villagers started to basically make the father of the girl feel bad about the fact that he wasn't looking out for his daughter and that these strangers were doing it. And because they were putting pressure on him, the father went and demanded that the daughter be returned. And so they did. And eventually the same issue happened. The daughter starved and she eventually died. And he reflects on this, and he says, this is the author, he's reflecting on this and saying, how could this have happened? And the point was, there was no Judeo-Christian ethic where individuals had human rights that had value. They viewed her as a burden. She was the youngest daughter. Even if she survived to maturity, they were going to have to provide a dowry for her when she got married. And it simply wasn't worth it. And it's very powerful when this person points out that this is the foundation of that culture. And that it got me to thinking, as I was growing up, I've always been sort of influenced that, you know, your religion is something you don't talk about. You know, politics and religion are things you don't talk about in polite company. And I was kind of one of these people. I don't want to offend, right? That's kind of I would say a Western idea, is that we don't typically want to offend others. And when I read this book, I started realizing the idea of caring for the blind and the deaf, that came from Christianity, that came from the monks. The idea of research and industrialization all came from monks and Christianity. And he keeps pointing out in this book that this didn't happen from monks and priests of any other kind of religion. It only came from Christianity. And when you talk about elimination of things like slavery, that happened because monks created industrialization and the ability to get tasks done that didn't require human slavery to do. And this allowed people to be freed up. But it wasn't just that the work could be done by alternative means. It was the idea that people had value. And when he lays it out, it's just so clear to me. And it got me to thinking that, you know, in my life, I want to be a little more evangelistic in talking about the Word of God and just how important it is into our civilization. Because at the end of the day, Western civilization and our democracy, our republic, our form of government, it doesn't come from the Greek models. The Greek models have all failed. Our model comes from the Bible, where it clearly states that our individual rights come from God and not from any government or group of people, that we have certain inalienable rights, and that among them are the rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, the rights of free speech. When we think of morality, you know, what is morality? What is right and wrong? Well, that idea comes from the Bible. Without the Bible, there is no objective truth or objective morality. It's whatever it takes to survive. And in fact, before the Bible, before Jesus Christ, before the Ten Commandments, and before governments that protected property rights and individual rights, might made right, right? The most powerful gangs, they took control of things, and this inhibited the innovation and the creativity of people, because there's no incentive to be creative and inventive. When you think about somebody thinking to themselves, you know what, I'm going to take this land I have and I'm going to grow apples. Well, they decide not to grow apples because they think it through and they say, well, as soon as I grow these apples, some strong person is going to come and take it from me. And so what's the point? And so they don't do it. But when you live in a society where we have laws and we have individual rights and property rights, it incentivizes people to create. And the person who wants to grow an orchard of apples does so. And when somebody grows apples, it encourages another person to come up with baskets that they can sell to the person who's growing the apples and say, hey, it will make it more efficient for you to move your apples around if you have these baskets. And so it helps develop an economy. And that Western civilization is what led to the wealthiest, most prosperous, most free society in the history of the world. Now, detractors are always going to say, oh, you had slavery and you interned the Japanese and, you know, we killed the Indians and all this kind of stuff. And the fact of the matter is, there's only been one person in the history of the world that lived a perfect life, and that's Jesus Christ. Everybody else, me included, we're all flawed. We're all sinners. We all fail and we all fall short. And, you know, when I was young, my father used to teach me that one of the things that made the founding fathers so great is that they were all sinners and they were all flawed and failed, and yet they still were able to put together the blueprint for the greatest society in human history. And here we are, I think to myself, possibly on the precipice of losing that republic. And I'm making one last plea to you people out there. Get out and vote. Get out and vote. Because without this country, without the United States of America and our Constitution that clearly states that our rights come from God and states what they are, freedom of speech, without that, the rest of the world will fall. And we've got to understand what's going on right now. It's not just our country. The rest of the world is involved in this. There are globalists and transnational corporations and non-government organizations that stand to make a ton of cash and have a ton of power. And the only thing really stopping them is the United States of America. And you have to understand what's happening in this world is a collusion between governments. And I'm going to start connecting some dots for you. So when I was young, they used to have pastors on TV. There was a man named Jimmy Swaggart. And, you know, he was one of these Southern religious type people. And on Sunday mornings, you could turn on the show and they would start preaching. And I would look at this as a kid and I would kind of say, this seems like he's just trying to scam people to make money. And then somewhere along the line, Jimmy Swaggart fell, like many do. He had an affair on his wife. And it really soured me on religion because the man was a hypocrite. And at the time, I was just too young and stupid to understand that Jimmy Swaggart doesn't represent Christianity. He was just another human being. The Word of God and the Bible, it's still so important. It doesn't matter if the people who are talking about it are sinners, because they all are. So don't be surprised when you find out that they are. And again, like my father taught me, the thing that made the founding of this country so meaningful, so amazing, so unbelievable was that this perfect blueprint for the best society in human history came from flawed men. And it was during my time in medicine where I've seen so many horrible things. I just saw another one that I don't understand where, how it could happen. I got consulted on a patient and, they've had a very serious medical condition, and I see the mother and father in there, and there's really no hope for any long-term recovery for this particular patient. And I still ask myself, why is this happening? What is the meaning in this? And if not for the Bible, and my faith, there would be so much despair there. And this is the same type of thing that's bringing comfort to those parents right now. And here's the other thing. The Judeo-Christian West and the idea of Western civilization, morals that come directly from the Ten Commandments and Christian teachings, the idea that every individual has meaning, has value, has rights endowed by their creator, is just so important. And without Western civilization, that doesn't exist. And how can we preserve something if we're trying to ignore the fact that it's the Judeo-Christian ethic that created this stuff? And from that came medicine. I mean, it's when I'm reading this book by Magawande, and I apologize if I'm not saying his name correctly, Vishal Mangalwadi. If you don't understand that it's the Judeo-Christian ethic that created these things, and we don't support it with a full-throated endorsement, we're going to lose it. And I'm just going to try and give you guys a little example. When I was younger, I was approached by somebody from Amway. I don't know if any of you out there remember Amway. It was a Ponzi scheme scam, and it was basically they would come to you and they would say, hey, if you sell these products that you would normally use, soaps and, you know, cleaning supplies and, you know, just makeup and creams and things like that, you would buy it from Amway, you would sell it to your friends, and eventually you would make money off of the sale of these things to your friends, and then you would make so much money that you wouldn't have to work, and then your friends would do the same thing to their friends, and it's a basic Ponzi scheme. And so a lot of the people that were successful in this organization, Amway, were very charming people. They could come in and they talk to you and they seemed very normal, and they would tell you their story of, I was working so hard at this job and not being able to spend time with my family. And then as I got really good at this sales thing, which was really just selling to my friends and just telling my friends, look, you sell, you know, you buy from me and then you sell to your friends and we're all going to make money and nobody's going to have to work. It was very intoxicating. It was enticing. It was like, man, I would love to make tons of money and not really have to work for it, right? And, you know, one of the things we learn from wisdom and in this world that, you know, nothing is free. If it seems too good to be true, it is. And one of the things that happened with this Amway group is you would go to these meetings, and I forget how often they were, but basically you would go to a meeting, and the meeting would basically be a person who is successful in the organization, and they would tell you their story. I was working on a, you know, on a railroad, you know, carrying railroad ties and breaking my back. And then I started doing this, and now I have this multi-million dollar home, and I have a boat and a yacht, and I spend time with my kids, and all we do is have great fun, and I never have to work or worry for anything. And it's very evangelistic. And the whole idea is it's motivating. And by the end of the speech, you're like, I want to get out there and go talk to my friends and sell. And so a lot of people would say, I like the idea of this Amway group, but I don't want to do these meetings. And what the people that were successful in Amway would say, well, you don't have to do these meetings, but if you don't do these meetings that inspire you to keep selling to your friends, you're just not going to do it because that's the formula. Now, I'm here to tell you, Amway, in my opinion, is a scam. I'm not suggesting that anybody do it, but the point I'm trying to make is when you have a model that is successful, that works, you have to follow that model. It's the meetings that keep you motivated to go and continue to sell to your friends. That is the secret, but it's also kind of the distasteful thing to do. You know, you don't want to have to go to these meetings that are just rah, 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 and you don't want to have to go to your friends and do the selling. But if you don't do this stuff, it's not going to work. Well, while I don't think Amway is useful, and I wouldn't suggest anybody doing it, and I never did, I kind of was like, oh, this is weird, and I'm not doing it. The concept is important, that you have to do the things that make you successful. Now, let's translate that into things that are important, like Nick Saban talking about football, and they talk about things that are important, like consistency will overcome talent every day, right? And I tell my kids this all the time. I'm living proof of it. You know, I got a 1080 on my SAT scores, but I kept working and working and working. I was consistent with it, and I was eventually able to succeed. And that is true about anything, you know. And so when you think about the American experiment and our constitutional republic, you can't have it without acknowledging that is based on the Bible and the Judeo-Christian ethic. It's based on morality that comes from the Bible, the Ten Commandments. Our idea of individual rights and all this comes from Western civilization, and you have to acknowledge it. And so this idea that we're going to be able to maintain our sovereignty, our individual rights, our constitutional rights, but somehow we're going to secularize it and we're going to eliminate the idea that it emanates from our Judeo-Christian heritage is just not true. And it's not going to happen. And unless we are willing to go out there and talk about how important it is, we're going to lose it. And we can already see it during the experience through COVID, that this idea of free speech is being chipped away at all the time. We see the Second Amendment being chipped away at all the time. And a lot of this has to do with propaganda. Now, we are always being propagandized. All of us are. And we're always being affected. Now, a lot of us are affected to different levels, but you have to constantly be revisiting what you believe and why you believe it. Now, I'm just going to tell you, one of the things when I reflect on my life is I fell into this whole nation building concept of we got to spread democracy around the world. And, you know, if we get into these countries, these Middle Eastern countries and things that have no Judeo-Christian ethic, that somehow they're going to embrace our Republican form of government and representative republic. And they had phrases like, you know, if we don't fight them over there, we're going to fight them over here. And it's these people that want to have these global wars and things that sort of influence the population. And they do it through a variety of different ways. They do it through movies, through education, through news stories and the way they're presented. And over time, things get into your head. And I'm just going to give you a little example of this, because this to me is just so ridiculous that I can't believe that it actually happened. And let me see. All right. So this is the Stephen Colbert show. This was at the height of COVID. And it's basically him opening his show. And for those of you who can't see it on screen, he's doing this dance in his, you know, with his audience there. And there's a whole bunch of backup dancers that are all dressed up like syringes. Yes, you heard that right. They're dressed up like syringes. And I want you to listen to this, and I'll kind of describe it as you listen.
The vaccine.
Hang on 1 second. All right. So there's a bunch of syringes behind him doing like a cam dance. And Stephen Colbert's dancing around in front of them. He's got they all have big smiles on their face. I mean, these things are really ridiculous. Got little needles on their heads. Their bodies are, you know, cylindrical like a syringe. And then Stephen Colbert's like going into the audience and shaking people's hands. These dancers are going out into the audience. Everybody's clapping like seals. Yay, the vaccine. He's shaking everybody's hand. He pulls a lady out of the crowd. Now he's dancing with her in the aisle with the vaccine syringes around her. All right. That's about enough of that. I can't stand any more of it. But, you know, when I look at that, it's just so ridiculous. But that was part of the propaganda campaign that, you know, they threw at us. It comes at us in all different ways. And I know I've kind of shared on this show before this idea that, you know, I didn't grow up as a gun owner. You know, my dad was in the military. We didn't have any guns. I wasn't anti-gun. I never gave it a thought. And of course, when I was growing up, I was thinking that we had evolved, that we had solved all the problems of the world and that, you know, human beings were just, you know, we're there now, you know, that we have the United States of America and we have all of our freedoms enshrined in our Constitution and that we were already protected. That's how I believed things were going on. But, the fact is we were being propagandized to back then. And one of the things that got into my head was that if you owned a gun, that you were more likely to have that gun taken from you by an intruder and you would be killed by your own gun. Like, I don't even know where that came from. It's not like I'm studying guns, but that idea was in my head, that concept that if you owned a gun, the statistics showed that you were more likely to have that gun taken from you and that you would be killed by an intruder. And I don't know how it got in there. And one day I'm watching the TV show, The Sons of Anarchy, and they have this scene where the Sons of Anarchy, who are bad guys, is kind of weird. This, I think, is a sign of the times. Breaking Bad was another one of these shows. Dexter, where you have sort of these evil streaked villains that become the hero of the show. And for me, it's just kind of weird. Like, I can't root for a guy who's a serial killer like in Dexter, but yet the show wants you to do it. Sons of Anarchy was like that. You have these guys that are basically drug dealers and murderers and gangsters, but they're nice murderers and gangsters and drug dealers, and you're kind of rooting for them. Anyway, they had this scene where they needed to go scare the police chief's wife, and they had no intention of hurting her because they're good guys, and they just wanted to give her a scare for some reason. I can't remember. And they break into her home. She goes to get the gun in her bedside table. It accidentally goes off, and she gets killed. And they certainly didn't mean to do it. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, my goodness. This whole scene just reenacts this concept that's in my head that I have no idea where it came from. But I'm like every other American. I watch TV. I listen to the news. I go to school. You know, and all this stuff is everywhere. And it's even worse now because we have social media, and now with AI, artificial intelligence, this stuff is going to be moving at breakneck speed. And if we're going to preserve our country, if we're going to preserve our way of life where individuals have value, where we have freedom and sovereignty, we're going to have to be on guard because they are constantly chipping away at our freedoms. And little by little, we're starting to lose it. And we see right now that we've got a two-tiered system of justice. There's a guy named Douglas Mackey who's serving prison time because he did a meme that mocked Hillary Clinton, a meme. And you think to yourself, this is insane. How could this possibly happen? We see people that are going to school board meetings because we're opposed to boys in the girls' bathroom and we're opposed to boys playing girls' sports that are being attacked. Donald Trump's, one of his advisors, Steve Bannon and Peter Navarro, another one of Trump's advisors, Bannon's just still in prison. He's about to get out of prison. And this is for avoiding, he ignored a subpoena to go in over, I think it was January 6th. But yet when the left does these types of things, Eric Holder, he was brought up on contempt of Congress. Nothing happened to him. And so we're starting to see this chipping away at our legal system and our rights. And if we don't pay attention, this stuff is going to be gone forever. Now, if you're going to be able to protect yourself, you have to do a couple of things. Number one, you have to be educated on how it happens. And number two, you have to be vigilant and willing to reassess what you believe and why you believe it all the time. Because once you see the light, you know, you evolve. And I can tell you, just when I think about my relationship with God and my journey through Christianity, I started off sort of thinking, well, religion is stupid and it's for weak-minded people and it's responsible for all the wars, to now I feel that if you have any hope of having a meaningful life, you have to give your life to Jesus Christ. And I don't feel afraid to say it. And you can prove to people, because I am a scientist, you can prove to people that if you follow the Bible and you follow its teachings, that your life will be objectively better. And it's just a fact that it is. And when you understand that the things that we believe, like when you ask yourself, what is morality? Why do we know right from wrong? Where does that come from? Well, it comes from the Bible and the Judeo-Christian Western teachings. Our governments, of where people are generally free, or at least the freest that we've ever seen in society, are all predicated on individual human rights. And that individual human rights comes from, yes, you heard it, the Bible. Now, when I was a kid, the thinking of, you know, the way the world worked. I remember the first time I got to stay up past my bedtime when I was in, I can't remember, it was 1975, 76 when the movie Roots came out. And it was called Roots. I'm blanking on the author's name. But it was basically the story of an entire family where the family started, the original character was a character named Kunta Kinte that was a slave that was taken from Africa, brought to the United States, and it follows his life, his kid's life, and all the generations of that family through slavery and all the way up to the author. And I really can't believe I'm blanking on his name right now. And anyway, this was like an 11-day series. So back in those days, everybody, there was only three TV channels. So when you would go to school the next day and you'd ask everybody, did you see Roots last night? And every single person saw it. And I saw it as well too. And I remember watching this show and thinking to myself, man, I'm so glad that we're past this and that, you know, this is in the 70s and that, you know, by the time I grow up, it'll all be over and we won't have any racism anymore and all this kind of stuff. And it also kind of established the foundation for white guilt. And, I look back on it now and I think to myself, man, there was a lot of negative stuff that came out of it. And also, here we are 40, 45 years later, and race relations are the worst they've ever been. And why is that? And it's because we are constantly being propagandized and we're constantly being influenced to think the way we think. And I, you know, we talk about it on the show from time to time, but you know, when I'm in my real life, I don't care about people's race. I don't care what their skin color is. But when I turn on the news, they tell me it's the most important thing. And so, you know, we got to understand that these types of things are, have always been going on and they continue to go on. Now, when I was at Berkeley, you know, a lot of people will say to me, like, cause if you guys don't know, I'm a conservative, you know, political bent. I lean to the right. And so a lot of people who know me will be like, man, you went to Berkeley? Like, I can't believe it. And I'll always tell them, like, I didn't come out of the box thinking like this. I learned by just observation. And one of the first things I saw at Berkeley was how the left is constantly manipulating the narrative. So when I was at Berkeley, they always protest something. You know, there's always some baseline protest. And then when bigger protests come along, they adjust. And one of the things you notice is that the protesters never seem to be the students. They're always sort of these homeless people and people that are paid to sort of be there. And I remember one of the baseline protests that would be going on all the time would be gay people coming out of the closet. And so you'd go onto the Sproul Plaza there and there would be just a door jam. And people would come out, you know, they'd go through the door and it was sort of, insinuating or symbolizing them coming out of the closet. And as they would come through the door, people would clap and cheer. And I used to think to myself, first of all, there's only like three people at this so-called protest, number one. And number two was, none of us cared if you were gay anyway. Like, why do you make it a thing? Like, none of us care what you do on your own time. Now, to the extent that influences my life, I do have a problem with it. Like, I'm not okay with boys in the girls' bathroom, okay? I'm not okay with boys and girls' sports. And that, you can draw a direct line from those protests to what we're seeing today. And the reason is because we're reasonable people. We're generally, we don't want to offend. We generally like to get along, but we are constantly being attacked. Now, one of the other things that they would do is you'd have three people at this protest, but what they would do is they would wait till lunchtime, and at lunchtime, all the classes are out, and the Sproul Plaza there is packed with thousands of students that are basically all going to lunch, and they would snap a picture. And then in the paper the next day, they would have a headline that said thousands show up to the protest. And I'd be thinking to myself, what a joke. There was three people there, and they're just taking this picture at lunchtime. And I would shrug my shoulders like, nobody's falling for this. But the reality is, everybody was falling for this. And it's a tactic that they use, and it still goes on today, which means you have to be on guard. You can't always believe your lying eyes. And I got to tell you, these people were so insane, these far leftist type people, you know, with piercings everywhere. I remember I would go to class one time and this guy comes up to me and puts his hands on me, grabs me by my lapels, and he says, you know, cancel, don't go to class today, protest whatever we're protesting. And he's like, sacrifice that GPA. And I just kind of looked at him and I said, dude, get your hands off me. I threw in a little expletive there too, but I'm just going to leave it at, dude, get your hands off me. And, you know, it's funny to me, the people that, you know, skip class and all this kind of stuff, the people that scream about, you know, what's right and wrong in this world, it always amazed me. At the time I was, you know, 19, 20, 21 years old, realizing I didn't know a thing. And then you have these other kids, same thing. They're 19, 20, 21 years old. They don't know anything, but they're so vitriolic and just so sure that they're right about everything. And I used to think to myself, don't they ever take a step back and just think for themselves? And, you know, you see it in these kids today that are shouting from the river to the sea, from the river to the sea, you know, with the Hamas recently attacking Israel and that whole conflict. And then you go and ask these kids, what river and what sea are we talking about? And they have no idea. They have no idea what they're talking about. And so people have an agenda. They're constantly trying to affect the way we view things. And you need to be on guard about that kind of stuff. Now, Glenn Beck has written a book recently that's coming out. And the book is called Propaganda Wars. And I think it'll be a good book for people to read to understand just how they're coming at us with foreign governments colluding together, with the way social media constantly presents things to us, the way AI will be able to, you know, make images of anybody and showing them doing anything. And you're not going to be able to tell if it's real or not. And it's going to be really difficult to understand the world that we live in. Now, because I'm a sentient being and because I know people are flawed, I just want to say to you people out there who are kind of like rolling your eyes when I say Glenn Beck. Now, Glenn Beck has done some really good stuff. He's actually done a lot of good stuff. Now, one of the things that I think he failed at was the first time Trump was coming around, he hated Trump for some reason, and he actively tried to undermine Trump against Hillary Clinton, who I find to be maybe the foulest person ever to run for office. Now, he's since come to the light. And so the point I'm trying to make is, as sentient beings that are constantly thinking and evaluating, you got to understand nobody's perfect. All right. And I don't trust anybody based on their title. I don't trust anybody based on their education. I don't trust anybody based on their age. I trust people based on what they say and what they do, mostly on what they do. And I'm constantly reevaluating it because people can be right on one thing and wrong on another. I'll just point out RFK Jr. He's absolutely right on his evaluation of COVID and the vaccines and all that kind of stuff, in my opinion. but he's wrong on a lot of other stuff that has to do with economics and things like that. So understanding that there is no arbiter of truth, which leads me to the next big thing, which is freedom of speech. And we've talked about it on this show over and over again. And it's, you know, if I can leave you with this last thing, do not let them control you by telling you that you have to defer to the experts, right? The science, you know, they're always using these terms to get you to stop thinking and to cede power decision making to other people. And it's just wrong. And just so you understand how they are colluding, you've got the British Labour Party that is now stumping for Kamala Harris. I mean, that is absolutely foreign interference. And you have to ask yourself, why is a foreign government involving itself in our election over here? Well, they're working together. Okay. These foreign governments are working together to eliminate X, owned by Elon Musk. And the reason is because X has some semblance of freedom of speech and allows us to openly talk about ideas, including healthcare. Right? It was during the COVID debacle, if you said that masks didn't work, if you said that ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine did work, and if you said that there were issues with the vaccine and that there were some people that maybe shouldn't even take the risk, like young people, where we knew right off the bat they didn't have any real risk from the COVID virus, well, you were labeled a known spreader of misinformation and you were deplatformed. And you risk losing your medical license. And in fact, many did. And the experts came out and said that these people needed to be ostracized. And now we've got the Cochrane review that confirms masks don't work. And we now have the CDC director admitting, I've played it for you a million times, the vaccines can no longer prevent transmission of the vaccine, of the virus. Okay. We now know that the FDA admits that ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine are in fact useful treatments for COVID. Okay. Just a few short years ago, that would have gotten you deplatformed. Okay. And if we lose control of X, which is really the only large social media company, there's Truth Social as well and Rumble and some others where you're allowed to have free speech, but you got to understand it is very precarious. There are other things we can look back. I don't know if you guys remember, but Donald Trump got impeached for what they call a quid pro quo. Okay. So they were saying that he was on the phone with Zelensky, who was the president of Ukraine, and that he basically said, if you don't investigate Hunter Biden, and his, relationship with Burisma, that I'm going to withhold aid money from the United States. And they called that a quid pro quo. And they tried to impeach him over it. And so Adam Schiff got up there before Congress and he started saying what Trump said. He bullied him and he told Zelensky that if you don't do what I want you to do, you're not getting this money. He basically lied. And you know what Trump did? He released the transcript of the phone call. Okay. And you could just read it and see that that didn't happen at all. And they did not stop the impeachment. They just proceeded as if nothing had ever happened. And then when Schiff was confronted with, hey, you said all this stuff that Trump said in front of Congress, and it's not in the transcript. And he said, well, I was just being hyperbolic to make a point. Dude, you weren't being hyperbolic. You were flat out lying about what he said. We had, before the last election, Hunter Biden's laptop that has all kind of corruption on there. And we all know from, well, we know now that approximately 17% of people who voted for Biden would have voted for Trump. And in fact, that would have shifted the election. But we had these 51 former intelligence officers coming out saying that the Hunter laptop was Russian disinformation. And that if you tried to go and post that the Hunter laptop was real, you were deplatformed. Okay. We have the FDA, the CDC, the New England Journal of Medicine, and the Lancet all caught doing inappropriate things. And the reason I bring this stuff up is that there is no institution that's 100% right. There is no arbiter of truth. There is no ability for so-called experts to tell you what is and what isn't true. The only way we get to that point is through freedom of speech and through open debate. And it can't just be that we're free. We have to be free to be wrong. People have to have the ability to go out there and say, hey, I just don't agree with you and I want to talk about it without being called a racist or a homophobe or a tyrant or a Hitler, you know, or a known spreader of misinformation. Or if you ask questions, we're going to investigate your company using the IRS and things of that stuff. We have to be understanding that the only way we get to the truth is through open and honest debate. Now, you got to understand, as I've gone through my life, I've had the ability to see people at the highest levels of business, the highest levels of education, the highest levels of medicine, and you know what I've learned? I've learned that a lot of them are full of it. They don't know, they're faking it. You know what I mean? I'm the same way. I was sitting on the couch yesterday and my 16-year-old daughter says, "Hey dad, I need some help with chemistry." Now, I crushed chemistry in med school and it was tough chemistry. I got an A. I crushed it. I knew it well at the time. I could draw out every single amino acid. Now I can't even name them, but I used to be able to draw the actual structure of every amino acid. I had it down. I was an expert in chemistry. Not now. My daughter's asking me, how does cobalt and fluorine go together? And I was like, well, and in my head, I'm thinking, oh, I got this. And I went, well, cobalt is 2+. And I had to think to myself, what does the 2+ mean? That's the valence. I'm thinking through this stuff. And I asked her, I go, what's the valence of fluorine? And she goes, it's -1. And I go, okay, so it's cobalt 1 and then 2 fluorines. And it's because the charge evens out. And as I was trying to explain it to her, I realized that I've forgotten a lot of this stuff and I don't actually have it down. Well, that's true of everything. You look at a guy like Fauci. He might have at one time had some knowledge in virology and all this stuff, but over decades, he became a bureaucrat. He doesn't know this stuff. And the thing is, people try to intimidate you. They try to come in and they use big words and they try to make you feel stupid. And the thing is if you can gain the confidence, as I have, where nobody makes me feel stupid. My daughters often ask me, why is it you don't fear speaking in public? And I go, you know, the real reason I don't fear speaking in public is I don't respect anybody enough to be afraid of what they think of me. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way. It's just we're all flawed. We're all failed. We're all sinners. We all fall short. And it's not a knock on anybody. It's me too. I have to constantly reevaluate where I'm at. But I have some experience in this world and I do know about medicine. And I want to get people to start thinking. You know, I have two daughters and it's amazing to me. I see that you have these confused boys that think they're girls and for whatever reason they feel the need to compete in girl sports. And I'm thinking to myself, man, if that ever happened to my daughter, you would know my name. I'd be out there. What is going on? And certainly if we're letting boys into the girls' bathroom, that is a problem. And we got, you know, situation here with that kid in Virginia that sexually assaulted a girl in a public school and the school covered it up and just moved the kid to a different school and tried to bury it. That is not going to cut it, folks. And that is what is on the ballot here. And I apologize if I'm getting a little political and not, you know, the doctor's lounge. I'm not talking about medicine as much. Well, you know, they talk about politics is downstream from culture. Well, medicine is downstream from culture too. And right now our culture is out of control. If I make a statement that I don't think you should cut the genitals off of little boys and little girls who are confused about their sex, that is going against the medical boards and that I risk my medical license. Hey folks, we got to get it together, man. I should at least be able to talk about it without being worried that I'm causing a problem. And I want to just let you know where we're at right now. And I know I've played this before, but it is important to understand what time it is in the game. All right. Here's the Berkeley law professor that is being questioned by Josh Hawley, Senator Josh Hawley. I want you to listen to how she speaks. Stand by.
I want to visit with you, Ms. Maskey, but before I do, I just want to
clear Berkeley one thing. Law professor.
Professor Bridges, you said several times, you've used a phrase, I want to make sure I understand what you mean by it. You've referred to people with a capacity for pregnancy. Would that be women?
Many women, cis women, have the capacity for pregnancy. Many cis women do not have the capacity for pregnancy. There are also trans men who are capable of pregnancy, as well as non-binary people who are capable of pregnancy.
So this isn't really a women's rights issue.
That this impacts women while also recognizing that it impacts other groups. Those things are not mutually exclusive, Senator Hawley.
Oh, so your view is that the core of this right then is about what?
So I want to recognize that your line of questioning is transphobic.
Okay. So first of all, she's using a whole lot of words, cis, non-binary, all this kind of stuff. We never had a meeting and agreed that this is science. This is a joke. All right. This is politics. And she's uttering gobbledygook. And you have to understand, this is a Berkeley law professor. All right. These Berkeley law professors are the people that are training our future attorneys and judges, the kinds of people that are putting people like Douglas Mackey in prison for making a meme. Okay? You have to understand just how important this stuff is. These are the people that are going to prosecute parents who say, I know my son thinks he's a girl or my girl thinks he's a boy, and they want to cut off their genitals and take hormone blockers that are going to permanently alter their physiology and most likely sterilize them. They risk losing their children. This is insanity, folks. And if we don't stand up to it, it's going to continue. The other thing that is abhorrent to me is the smug look on her face, but because she knows that the institutions of power are behind her. Okay. And the fact that, they're talking about this issue of boys in the girls' bathroom and boys and girls' sports and things like that. And she starts saying, your line of questioning is violence. Like this cold, wet blanket on open and free speech to try and get to the truth is really chilling.
It opens up trans people to violence by not recognizing them.
Wow, you're saying that I'm opening up people to violence by asking whether or not women are the folks who can have pregnancies?
So I want to note that 1 out of 5 transgender persons have attempted suicide. So I think it's important.
Because of my line of questioning?
Because,
so we can't talk about it?
Because denying that trans people exist and pretending not.
So the other thing I want you to notice is you see how she's trying to tell Josh Hawley you can't talk about this because you're creating violence. This is Kamala Harris, who just called Trump Hitler again after he's an attempted assassination on him twice already. These people are utterly unbelievable, and you need to stand up to it. You need to demand a pursuit of truth. You need to understand the game that we're in. You know, in December of 2020, Cheryl Atkinson caught the CD, or Robert Massey, Congressman Robert Massey, caught the CDC lying about Pfizer COVID vaccine trial data. He said he recorded the phone conversations with the CDC where they admitted that he was right. And he said his late wife, Rhonda, suggested that I give these tapes to Cheryl Atkinson, which she did. And this is what Cheryl Atkinson had to say about the CDC and the pharmaceutical companies.
Was about.
All right, this is great.
This call with CDC's Washington, D.C. Director Anstis Brand.
If there's a they who is refusing to fix something that is factually and provably wrong, I want to know who they is. Because this is going to result, and it's already resulting, in misallocation of the vaccine.
Let me check that. Okay. Massey also argued.
You know, we're getting to the end of the show, and I don't have time to go over that. But the point is, Massey caught these people, and they felt so comfortable with it that they just continued to go on. And you know, we also have studies here, 821,000 children studied in England. Half of them opted out of the second dose of the vaccine. Myocarditis and pericarditis are only seen in the children who received the shots. No deaths from COVID in either group. That was all risk, no benefits. Folks, we have to get back to the Constitution. We have to get back to supporting individual rights and understanding that human beings have value in the eyes of God. The idea that our morality comes from the Bible, I encourage you all to read Vishal Magawadi's book, The Book That Made Your World. It's life-altering. I hope that the Doctor's Lounge has been useful to you guys. I hope that you guys have found it both entertaining and educational. And we intend to make the show even bigger and better. So make sure that you follow us at Docs for Patient Care. And we will be posting everything up on the website. Again, we're going to post other changes on the America's Web Radio website as well. Everybody have a blessed day. I'm out.
The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on America's Web Radio are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.